like to reach many more of you on our podcast. Today, it is our extreme pleasure to welcome Tony Burris, taught in Decatur County, Gibson County, and Peabody High School. While at Peabody, he led the band to win three state Division I marching band championships. Past president of the West Tennessee School Band and Orchestra Association and past mayor of the city of Trenton, Tennessee, Burris is still an incredibly active musician and clinician. Mr. Burris has been married to his wife, Kathy, for 42 years and has two children, Emily Brown and the late John Ryan Brown, Burris, and four grandchildren, Kaiser, Katie Beth, Andrew, and Cannon. Many of Tony's students have gone on to become band directors and music education teachers, including his daughter, who is the middle school band director at Medina Middle School in Medina, Tennessee. Tony is very happy to be returning to UTM today to speak with you all. Dr. Ammerman, I'm told that you have a few more questions for Mr. Burris. Take it away, Dr. Ammerman. Yeah.
Okay, Dr. Burris, will you tell us one of your funniest band director stories?
Okay, I'm going to tell you a really funny story. And it might be one of those where you kind of have to be there, but it's a pretty funny story. But I got to give you a little background on it first. One of my great mentors, one of the people that I respect more than anybody else in the world as far as band directing goes, is a gentleman who was the band director at Camden, Tennessee for years and years. His name is John Coleman. John Coleman is one of the most amazing music educators I've ever been around in my life. But and a tremendous ear. The guy could hear anything. But John had one problem. He was legally blind. He couldn't see maybe just forms and different things, but he was legally blind. So his assistant director always had to go get him every morning and take him to school, and he would do his teaching every day and the whole nine yards. So John was legally blind. So the story begins is around Strawberry Festival time in West Tennessee. Used to be a really big deal, and every band in West Tennessee went to Strawberry Festival. It was just part of what everybody did. They went to Strawberry Festival, they went to the Fish Fry. So what we would do in Gibson County, what the band directors would do, is we would go to each other's bands at some point before the Strawberry Festival and critique each other's bands and watch each other's bands perform and then give everybody some pointers on what was good. So one of my other great mentors was Pete Evans, and I don't know if you guys know who Pete Evans was, but he was a great band director. So Pete and another guy named David Wood, who was at Peabody before me, and John Coleman, we were all with my band at Gibson County. Now, at that time, the Gibson County band, we had about 135, 140 kids in the Gibson County band. It was a big band. So we were marching on the street, okay, and we're all watching the band and all this type of different thing, and we're watching the band, and we would stop, and then everybody get a chance to critique. And the thing about John was, it was really weird. He was legally blind, but he was the best person at picking out somebody's feet. Now, he might go, okay, seventh row back, fourth person in, they're phasing, their feet aren't right. And he'd be right every time. So we're rehearsing the band, and this car pulls up behind the band. And this woman gets out. It's almost the end of band rehearsal. So she gets out, and she goes to talk to her daughter. Well, anyway, so Pete and I are standing there, and Pete starts kind of laughing over my shoulder. He's looking over my shoulder and laughing. I'm going, Pete, what is wrong? He says, you got to see this. John is down in the front of the car, and he's trying to wave the car on. He's doing this, trying to wave the car on through. We look behind the steering wheel, and the woman's dog is behind the steering wheel. And the dog is doing this. You know, and here's John trying to wave his dog through in the car. And we cracked up forever. I mean, we cracked up. We never told John. John, to this day, doesn't know what happened. Finally, he just looked at the dog and he just looked at the car and went and just came on back to the rehearsal. But anyway, it was a real funny story. It may be one of those you'd had to be there in order to get it. But anyway, it was
That's
funny.
Amazing. I'd love to see a dog driving a car. Which brings me to my next question. If you could be any animal, which one would you be and why?
That's easy. I'd be a polar bear. I'd be a polar bear. I love bears. My wife is a gorilla person, and I'm a bear person. So when we go to the zoo, we go through the zoo and everything, and then before we leave, I go back to the bears and watch for a while, and then she'll go back to the gorillas and watch for a while. I just love it. I think bears are the neatest animal in the world. So, and I think polar bears are the neatest of the bears. So I would be a polar bear.
Aw, And it's getting chilly out, so
that's
this is your season, right?
Right, it's my season.
Okay, my last question is, when did you discover you wanted to be a music teacher?
I tell this story all the time because it's true. When I was in the first grade, I would watch my teacher. Her name was Miss Goosey, by the way. And I didn't think it was funny at the time. Now I think about it and I think, oh my gosh. Her name is Miss Goosey. Anyway, I'd watch her teach. And in the first grade, I said to myself, I'm going to be a teacher. That's what I want to do. I want to do what she's doing right now. So I wanted to be a teacher. Well, then in the fifth grade, I heard the band director, who was Mr. Workman, brought some kids into the gym, and we all went up in the stands, and he was recruiting for the band. And so, and I'll never forget this. Matter of fact, I was at my 45th class reunion the other day, and I told this story to the, Mike Breeze was a saxophone player. And I told this story to him, and he can remember doing it. He played I Left My Heart in San Francisco on the saxophone, and I said, I've got to be in band. I've got to be in band. I've got to do this. But also at the same time, the Beatles had just come out, and I had just seen the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and Ringo Starr was playing the drums. And so I knew right then, I want to be in band, but I'm going to be a drummer, because I want to be like Ringo Starr. And so probably from the sixth grade on, when I got in band, I realized that that's what I wanted to teach. So probably from the sixth grade on, I knew that I wanted to be a band director.
Well, those are so great, and we can't wait to hear the rest. I'm going to move the Facebook Live over a little bit so you can see you.
Okay, well, I'm going to try not to bore you all for the next how many ever minutes here, but I do want to thank Dr. Ammerman for inviting me up here tonight. I do want to thank Emily. Emily's band director, but when I retired in 2007, I started a community band in Gibson County, and we had players from all over. We had players from Milan, we had players from all over Gibson County. Some came from Madison County. A couple trombone players came from Wheatley County, and we had a community band, and Emily was one of my clarinet players. So that's where I really got to know Emily, and she's a terrific clarinet player. I'm sure she's 55,000 times better than that now, but I know I've known her since then. So thank you, Emily. And I want to thank the department for having me. And I know that this is something new, and I know that Dr. Emmerman is going to try this out and see how this works. And I hope that one thing I say in the next 45, 50 minutes is going to convince you that you want to teach music the rest of your life. I hope that there's something I'm going to say. Let me tell you another story real quick. And this is a John Coleman story also. And it's about students. I my third year of teaching, I got out of teaching, got out of public school teaching for a year, and I worked for a music store. I sold band instruments, and my main job was to start band programs in other schools. Now, it was a selfish type of thing. The music store wanted to sell band instruments, okay? So they thought the best way to do that is you send somebody out and start a band program in a school that doesn't have a band program, and guess who they're going to buy their instruments from? And so that was kind of a selfish thing, but we did it. We started band programs in Dresden. We started band programs at Rutherford. We started a band program at Greenfield. And maybe I'll get a chance to mention those again at some point. But anyway, I was selling band instruments. And so one of the things I did during the week is I went around to different schools, and I went to John's school at Camden one day, and he was in the middle of band rehearsal. And let me tell you something, the greatest thing that happened out of that whole experience of being out and selling band instruments was you got to go into other people's band rooms and watch them rehearse. I learned 50 blue million things to do that were positive that year. I learned 50 blue million things never to do with a band that year. But I learned a lot. So I'm in Mr. Coleman's rehearsal. Now Mr. Coleman, he's legally blind, so he can't read a score. I mean, it doesn't do any good for him to have the score down there because he can't read it to begin with. He's got it memorized. Everything he's done the score study, and it's all memorized, and everything's already in his head. So he's into this piece, and he's working, and he gets to this section, and he stops the band, and he goes, "Billy, it's B natural. It is B natural, Billy. You missed that yesterday. It's B natural." So he cranks it back up, get about four measures back into it again, and he stops the band. "Billy, I'm telling you, it's B natural. This is the fingering for that note." And I'm thinking, he's fixing to blow up here in just a second. And so he goes back in, gets to the same spot again, cuts the band off and says, "Billy, what am I going to do with you?" And this one little voice in the back says, "Mr. Coleman, Billy's not here today." Somebody was missing the B natural, but it wasn't Billy. But John couldn't see him. But that just goes to show. But the thing I learned from that was, if you don't have a student, you can't teach a student. If you don't have them, you can't teach them. And that was what happened with that. So, okay, now I got to tell you this. When Dr. Ammerman called me and asked me to do this, it scared me to death. Because I haven't been in a classroom teaching a class in 10 years. Okay, I've been doing something else. I've done sectionals for my daughter's band. I've done sectionals at Peabody. I've done this and that, but I've never just actually been in front of a class in a long time. So it scared me to death. But here's the deal, and here's what I always do now. Okay, when somebody asks me to do something that's really scary, I usually say yes. I'm going to do it, because you know something, the only way that you're ever going to grow is to do things that make you uncomfortable and that you have to do. Okay, now let me give an example of something I wouldn't do. If my friend called me and said, "We're going to bungee jump off a 1,000-foot bridge," I'd say, "Nah, I'm not going to do that." But when she called me and said, "You want to do this?" and my first reaction was, "No, I don't want to do this," but I said yes, because it will make me, I'll grow from this, and I hope in some way you grow from this. So I really thank her again for letting me do this. So who am I talking to? I'm talking to all music ed majors. Are there some people? Who is not a music ed major in here? Okay, good. But you're doing your thing. So. That's good. So you're all music ed majors. Okay, how many of y'all are instrumental music majors? Raise your hand. Instrumental. How many are choral majors? Good. How many are piano? Are there any piano? Is there somebody I'm missing? Piano?
I play piano,
okay. But you're an instrumental major? Okay. Okay, so, well, I got to tell you that that's where I spent the majority of my life. 30 years as a band director, and I spent most of the time in rural schools teaching band instruments, okay? Now, I'll tell you this, choral people. For the last 32 years, I've been the choral director of my church. I've been the choir director of my church. So, and that was a great thing, because, what does a drummer know about choir? And so I learned a lot about choir. I've learned about a lot about choir in the last 32 years. I've also learned about how you have to teach, how you have to do church choir, because it's a total different deal. Yes. You're dealing with adults. So, okay, so I'm talking to, so I want to tell you this. Tonight, I'm not going to get into a lot of different things. Like, I'm not going to say, like, what method book you should use to start your beginning band classes. I'm not going to tell you, what scales you need to sing to warm up. I'm not going to tell you those things. What I'm going to try to do tonight is tell you what a great thing it is to be a music educator. A music educator. Now, that's a great term, music educator. Most people would call me a band director, but a band director is a music educator. Okay, and so it's a great thing, and I want to talk to you about it. So I'm going to ask you some questions now, and I hope you can answer yes to all three of them. Okay. Okay. Do you love music? Do you love music? I mean, I'm not talking about the kind of love music where you turn the radio on while you're taking your shower in the morning and getting ready to go to class, or you're sitting around. Talking with other people and got some music in the back. I'm talking about love music. Are you looking for those 3 to 5 really great notes that just do something to you that nothing else can do? Beethoven's 5th, 2nd movement. Wow, that gets me every time. Stan Kenton's arrangement of My Funny Valentine. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. The use of Bach and the words of Chaucer in Procol Harum's Whiter Shade of Pale. When that starts up, when that organ, then I B3 cranks that Bach, it just kills me every time. Wicked. The end of the first act of Wicked. Oh my goodness. How many of y'all seen Wicked?
Ah.
Oh my gosh. The end of the first act. I've seen Wicked 5 times and I can't, I wanted to skip the first half so I can see that last thing. Do you love music? Do you love it so much that it's just part of your life? It's like the big part of your life. Do you love music? If you love music, you've got the makings to be a music educator. Do you really want to teach? How many of y'all in here have had somebody that said to you, "You don't want to teach"? You can do something better with your life than teach. How many people have said that to you?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. Those people are wrong. They're wrong. Because teaching is one of the most noble things that you can do on this planet. And you have got to love to teach, to get out there and do what you're fixing to do. Because let me tell you something. And we'll talk about some more in just a little bit. There's going to be a lot more to your life when you get out there to teach than just teaching music. You're going to have to face some things in your daily life that doesn't have anything to do with music. But your love of teaching is going to drag you all through that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Okay? Here's a big one. Do you love children? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a big one. You got to love children. You got to love them. Some of them are not going to be easy to deal with. But you got to love them. You got to try to understand them. We're going to talk about that in a little bit too. Do you love children? If you answered yes to all three of those questions, you could be a music educator. You could be a music educator. So what can you expect as a music educator? Okay? Let me tell you this. If you were going to be a football coach who taught mathematics, you're going to spend 97% of your days as happy as a clam. If you're a basketball coach that teaches science, you're going to spend 97% of your days as a teacher happy as a clam. Because guess what? No one is going to say, "We're going to cut the football program." Nobody's going to say, "We're going to not teach math anymore here." Nobody's going to say the basketball team's got to go. Or nobody's going to say science is irrelevant. Let's get it out of the curriculum. Okay? You're going to teach music. And you're going to have people every day that want to cut your rehearsal time, take your kids out of your rehearsals, maybe even want to cut your program altogether. That's what you're going to face every day, okay? And what you're going to have to do every day is you're going to have to fight every day. It's frustrating. And some days you're going to go home and say, "Why in the hell did I ever decide to do this?" And then you're going to wake up the next morning and go back and do it again. Because it's worth it. It's worth it. So what are you going to get? Pete Evans, who I mentioned before, told me before I graduated, he said, "Okay, Tony, get ready to play politics." And I said, no, I'm a musician. I'm a teacher. I don't have to be political. You're going to have to be political. You've got to play politics. You've got to get out there and fight and play politics and do some things it takes to keep your program going. So you're going to have to play politics. You're going to have to fight for your program. Okay? Now, that's all I'm going to say negative about music education. Okay? Here's some things that you get to do as a music educator. You get to do what you love. You get to teach kids. You get to experience making music. Isn't that, man, do you know how great that is? I'm 63 years old. Last night I'm standing in my church And we're getting ready for a fifth Sunday service, and we're playing with the praise band. I'm playing guitar, and I've got, you know, the piano player and the bass player and the drummer, and these girls are over on the side, and they're singing harmonies, and we're playing, and I'm done this a zillion times, and I am ecstatic. I'm 63 years old, and I want to jump up and down. I get to make music. It is so unbelievable to make music. I love doing it, and you're going to get to do that. You're going to get to make music, okay? You're going to get to see young people succeed. We're going to talk about success quite a bit here in a minute. You get to see young people succeed. Oh, man, that is such a great thing. You know, it's one thing for you to succeed, but it's so great to see somebody else succeed and love what they do. And here's the big one. You're going to get to make a difference in a young person's life. Whew. I've had kids come into my band in the fifth and sixth grade, and they're terrible. They're awful. They fight me for 2 years, tooth and nail. And you hold on, and you hold on, and then one of these days, they start to turn around. And by the time they're a freshman, they're really turned around. And by the time they're a junior and a sophomore, junior, they're really turned. By the time they're a senior, they're on fire. They're on fire. And then one day you see them in Walmart. They didn't become a music major. They went on and did what they did. You see them in Walmart. And you say, hey, how you doing? And they say, hey, how you doing? And they come up to you and they say, you know something? I would have dropped out of high school when I was a sophomore if it wouldn't have been for you. Boom. Boom. And that's making a difference in a young person's life. And you're going to get to do that. Isn't that great? You got that to look forward to. You're going to make a difference in a young person's life. That's the great things about being a music educator. That is the great things. Okay, so don't let anybody discourage you from teaching. Don't let anybody do that. Okay, now let me tell you something. You're never going to be rich. I'm wearing a $150 suit. I can't afford a $2,000 suit. And that you're never going to be rich. You are going to spend a lot of your weekends messing with kids. You're going to spend a lot of time away from your family, away from home. Maybe that's the only tiniest regret that I have about the whole deal is, you know, you're away from home a lot. You're gone. You're rehearsing. You're doing things. You're going to contests. You're going to All West. You're going to All States. You're doing this. You're going doing that. The key is get your kids in band, and then you're with them all the time. You get them to join the band, and you're with them all the time. Don't let anybody discourage you, because I'm gonna tell you something that I believe right now, at this time in the world, right now, we need dedicated, caring, compassionate teachers more than we've ever needed them ever before. We need them. You guys heard about the contest of champions?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't that just make you mad? Doesn't that just tear you up?
Sorry.
Yeah. You know, now the great thing is I think there's some high schools in the Nashville area that have offered their schools to split up the contest and take them to different schools and let it all still go on. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. Yes.
Can you explain what the Contest of Champions is?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know the situation.
Contest of Champions is held at MTSU every year, okay? And usually it consists of bigger bands, okay? Now, smaller bands come and compete, and good small bands can do real well there. But usually it consists of bigger bands, and there's bands that come from Kentucky, and there's bands that come from all over Tennessee and whatever. And it was just always called the Contest of Champions. There's Division I, there's Division II, but we always considered the Contest of Champions to be Division III, the big guys. And they rank you right now, no matter, you know, there's no classes, you just are ranked from 1 to how many ever are there. And it's just a big contest. It's been going on for years, probably 40-something years, probably longer than that. I can always remember the Contest of Champions. But because there's a group that's going to protest, you got to side on the side of safety. You have to do that because this group protested in Virginia and somebody got killed. So you have to decide on the side of safety and you don't have the contest. But you've taken that opportunity out of the hands of young people who have spent a lot of time getting ready for it. You're going to be facing a world like that. That's the world you're going to face. And you're going to have to deal with it. But you will. You'll deal with it. And you'll do it the right way. You've got to deal with technology. And now we fight technology for technology's sake. Have you ever found a piece of technology and could have done it a whole lot easier just doing it by hand than using the technology? Well, that's what we're running into these days. Okay, but you feel like you got to be cool. You feel like you got to be in the crowd. So let's do it this way versus do it, you know, the way that's quicker and maybe not more efficient, but that's quicker. So you have a lot of things to overcome. Okay, so you're going to be a music educator. You've graduated. You've done your job interviews. You've secured a job. And you're ready to go out and show what you've learned, okay? And Dr. Ammerman, maybe one good thing that you could let these students experience, let somebody come in and talk about interviewing for a job, because it's a crazy thing. And here's what you run into. I ran into it 40 years ago. You're going to run into it when you graduate. Everybody loves you, and they want to hire you, but you got to have experience to get hired. Well, how are you going to get experience? How are you going to get experience if they won't hire you to get experience? They'll say, "Oh man, we loved your interview. I can't tell you how many interviews I went to. We loved your interview. We thought you were great, but you haven't got any experience." Okay. So you're going to run into that, but that's all right. So let's say you've done all that. You've got through the interview. You got a job, and you're ready to go, okay? Yeah, and you're in. You've moved to the place, or you've moved to wherever you're going to teach. Okay, there are three groups of people that you have to win over. Three groups of people you have to win over, okay? The first and most important, who is it?
The janitor.
The students. The administration.
Mm-hmm. The first and most important. The students. You got to win them over first. You don't have them. Now, you're not wrong. We're going to get to that. But the first group is the students. You got to win them over, okay? Now, let me tell you a secret how you can go into the classroom and automatically be your student's favorite teacher. Let me tell you. I don't know. I have no idea how that works. I know this. I know some people can walk into a classroom and they can just turn their head and everybody is ready to go and wants to learn everything this person has in their brain. And I know some people that walk in a classroom and they know everything there is to know about what they need to know about and they can't get the classroom under control. Okay? Now, let me say this. You're taking many classes here as part of your program, okay? Keep your ears open and perked up in every last one of them. You know, maybe there's a class you don't like a whole lot. You know, I have 8 o'clock theory 3 days a week. Oh my gosh. But it was 8 o'clock theory. It was theory. I had to keep my ears perked up. You're gonna learn a ton of stuff. In your methods classes, man, if you don't listen in your methods classes, you're losing out. Because guess what you're going to have to do the first day you get out there? There's going to be a little girl going to walk up to you, and she's going to have this flute in her hand. She's going to say, "This flute don't play." And you're going to go, "Oh." And what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to play that flute and see why it doesn't play. Let me tell you a story. My first year out. In Decatur County, first year out. I'm a drummer, you know. This little girl in the sixth grade band, she couldn't make a sound on her flute. So here I'm just telling her, okay, now do this with your embouchure, do that with your embouchure, do all this stuff. You know, you're just not doing this exactly right. We went on like this for 2 weeks. The instrument representative from the music store comes one day, and I said, man, I'm having trouble with this flute player. I'm having trouble with this flute player. I can't get her to play. What am I going to tell her? I haven't been telling her. He said, well, let me see the flute. So I get it out and I put it together. He puts it up and goes, and then he takes a screwdriver and goes, and it just a perfect pitch right there. Two turns of a little screwdriver. And the flute played perfect. It wasn't the girls. It wasn't, when she picked it up the next time, she could play the heck out of it. But it was me. I didn't know. I didn't know that you could adjust those things. I did not know that there was little screws in there that you can adjust and it makes the pad lower. Okay? So listen in those instrumental classes and figure out what's going on about all these instruments. Listen to what's going on. Your theory classes, your music history class. Man, music history is, of course, theory is, you got to have theory. You got to know what you're doing. You have to be able to look at that score and tell what's going on in that score. You've got to, you know, your music history class. I love music history. I love it. I taught a music history class at Gibson County for the 11 years I was there, and I taught a music history class at Peabody for the 16 years I was there, and I love that class. But you know, at the end of that, for the last 8 or 9 years, I would never have a music person in my music history class. We'd always, it was offered only to seniors, and they needed it for a fine arts credit. That's what they needed. So we'd offer music history. I'd go through the list, there'd be 100 kids sign up for music history. I'd go through the list and I'd pick out, and I only could take 30. I'd take 30 kids and none of them would be music people. I'd take 30 kids, and I'm gonna tell you this. I told them the first day, when you guys go home for Christmas, you're gonna be asking mom and dad for either recording of Bach or Beethoven, or you're gonna be asking them for some classical music. Oh, Mr. Burr, you're an idiot. There ain't no way that's ever gonna happen. I hate classical music. I think that's awful stuff. Oh God, I can't stand it. Christmas time, they come in. You know, I got some Bach cantatas for Christmas. They loved it. They loved it because they loved hearing about these guys, and their lives and how they lived. And you know, they weren't some crazy white German guys anymore. They were people that had families. They were human, and they loved it, and they loved that music. You know. And so I love teaching that. And you listen to those music, you know, in those music history classes. I'll tell you the class I really hate more than other class. Do you guys still have to take physics of acoustics?
Oh, no. What?
We had to take physics of acoustics. And that class was always taught on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in the spring at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, right after lunch.
Gosh.
And that guy, and I can't remember his name. Matter of fact, if he walked in this room, I slept. I mean, head down, slept. I'm telling you that. But I wish I'd have listened now, because sometimes I've got acoustic problems I can't work out. And if I'd have listened, maybe I'd have known that. That was really the only class that I took that I really didn't like a whole lot. Okay, so where are we at? I'm sorry, I'm digressing. Okay. So, to win over kids, the first thing you got to do is you got to walk in there and know exactly what you're doing. You have to be prepared every day, because you know something, a student can smell you when you're not prepared. You can walk in that class and they're going, oh, Mr. Burris isn't prepared today. He doesn't know what he's going to be teaching us. You got to be prepared every day, okay? That'll help a whole lot. Now there is a stupid. I had a middle school principal one time that I thought it was the stupidest saying, and I'm going to have to even read it because I refuse to learn it myself. But now I go back and look at it a different way, and the saying was this: students don't care how much you know till they know you care. Students don't care how much you know till they know you care. You can't walk into a classroom and not feel empathy and compassion for your students. You can't do that. If you care for those kids, and that's like smelling you when you're not prepared. They know when you care, and they know when you don't care. And you have got to care for those kids. That's your job. I hate to use that word because I never had a job. It's part of what you do. Okay? I started teaching school on August 15th, 1977. I had my first rehearsal. There was no air conditioning in the band room, and I think that's why to this day I remember that rehearsal. It was August 15th, 1977, and we were rehearsing our first number for our first field show, and it was Star Wars. And they were excited out of their mind because Star Wars had just come out. And they were excited about it. And we were rehearsing that thing, and we had to rehearse every single note in that piece. They couldn't play their way out of a paper sack. And I was drenched from head to toe when that rehearsal was over with. I remember that day. My last day to teach was May 28th, 2007. And I walked out of school about 10:30. The last thing I did was did graduation in June or in May for those students in 2007. That's the last rehearsal I had. I loved that day. I loved August 15th, 1977, and every day until May 28th, 2007. That was what I was meant to do. It was never a job. It was never a job. Let me tell you something. Being a music educator is never a job. It is a lifestyle. It is the way you're going to live for the rest of your life. That's what it's going to mean to you. If it ever becomes a job, if you wake up some morning and say, I just don't want to go to the job today, then don't go. Get out. Go find something else to do. Go back to school and get your degree in something else. If you ever think of it as a job, then it's time to get out of it. Because it's not a job. It is a life. It is a lifestyle. Okay? Okay, so you're trying to win your students over. You got to win them over. Students love to be successful. They love to be successful. And in order for them to really have fun doing what you're doing, they need to be successful. Make them successful. Don't pay it lip service. Don't say, okay, that's good enough. I hated math teachers at one time. They sat there and they would go, I've been in math every day, and little Johnny still can't do that algebra problem. Every day, he sits in my class, and he still can't do that algebra problem. And I won't look at him and say, well, why don't you do what I did? Stay with the third trumpets after school and work with them till they get the dadgum thing. Because little Johnny can't do math in your class, but guess what? He can play the last movement of the piece I'm going to play for Concert Festival. Because I've worked with him. That's what you have to do. You got to make students successful. I don't care how bad a student is. If they can become successful, they will get on your side. They will get on your side. And they'll be with you. Okay, second thing. The administration. You got to win the administration over. Okay? Now, there's some unwritten law somewhere that says you got to hate your principal and you got to hate every coach in that building. I've heard band directors say it to me, don't you hate your football coach? Don't you just hate your principal? Listen, you don't need to be that way. You need to try to get along with them. You need to try to get along with them. You need to try to be congenial with them and to get along because you need them. Okay? Now, there are going to be days that you and the football coach are going to argue with each other. That's all right. That's fine. But get over it and move on. There are days that your principal is going to make you mad. And let me give you a little piece of advice. Principals don't want to see your kids in their office. Now, there are some times you have to take the kid to the office. If they got a gun on them, guess what? Take them to the office. If you can get them up there without getting shot. But if they're just talking in class, if they're just roughhousing over in the corner, handle it. Principals love, you know, I had a principal one time say to me in front of some other people, he said, you know, I love Tony Burris because Tony Burris always took care of his own problems. He never sent a kid up to my office. Now, it wasn't that Tony Burris knew what he was doing. It wasn't that Tony Burris was a great teacher. It wasn't that Tony Burris could influence kids. It was Tony Burris didn't send kids to his office. That was why he liked me. That's why he liked me. Okay? So, get along with your administration. I'm going to move on. The next thing is important. The community. Okay? The community. You need to get the community on your side. That's what you need to do. Now, here's what I think. I think if I teach at Peabody High School, I need to live in Trenton, Tennessee. Now, I just need to live there. You know why I need to live there? Because I need to know the people in that town. I need to know who the businesses are. I need to know who the people running the town are. I need to know the kids. I need to know where they come from. I need to know the background on every kid I've got, okay? And you need to know the background on every kid that you have. You need to know something about every child in your programs, okay? Now, I didn't say get in their business. I just said you need to know something about them. Because I'm going to tell you this, 99.999% of the time, if you've got a kid in your class that's making problems, all you have to do is take them home and look at where they came out of. And you will say to yourself, I don't even know how they got up and came to school today, how they put their clothes on and got out that door. Because they come, I'm telling you, do you know that in public schools now, we have to pack food home on the weekends because their parents won't feed them? They take that weekly paycheck and buy whatever it is that pleases them, and they don't even feed their kids. We pack food in people's backpacks and send it home with them. So, you need to know about your students. You need to know where they're coming from. You need to know the community. You need to, every time you do something, you need to have pictures in the paper. You need to share it on social media. Every time your band does something positive, get it out there where the community can see it. You want the community to know about your programs. You want them to know everything about it. Okay? Because here's the thing. When you got the community on your side, who's going to find you? Who's going to ever tell you, we're going to cut your program? You can't cut my program because everybody out there loves me. That's what you've got to do. That's what you have to do. You've got to do those things. Make the community aware of what you're doing and make the community love what you're doing and be part of what you're doing. They want to be part of what you're doing. What do they do on Friday nights? What does almost everybody in town do on a Friday night? They go to the football game because they can be part of it. They can sit there and they can yell at the refs and yell at the coach and they can tell, you should have ran that way, or they can do that. They can be part. You need to make that same thing with your kids, okay? Be part of the community, okay? Because if you are, they'll be real hesitant about putting on the chopping block, okay? I'm going to talk real quick about mentors, real quick. Mentors are important. There's nothing in my world I have ever done by myself. I have never had an original thought in my life. Think about that. You know, original thoughts are hard to come by. I've never had one. But I've seen other people do things, and I think, that's cool. That's good. I can teach my kids to do that, and that's really great. That's a mentor. Now, what you need to do is this. You see a band director out somewhere, you go somewhere, you go to a contest, you see a band director out somewhere, introduce yourself to them. Say, my name is Bob Brown, and I am a music education student, and I really think that what you're doing is great, or whatever. It doesn't make any difference. Introduce yourself to them. You know how I did it? Band camps in the summer. People would hire me to do their band camp. These band directors would, and I'd go and do their band camps, and I met all these other band directors, and it just, all these people that just taught me so much, you know. Of course, it wasn't bad that I was earning a little cash on the side, but that's the way you do it. You go out and you meet people, mentors. I had a middle school band director that was Emily's band director, who made me look good for 16 years. She sent me really good students. And all I had to do was just keep watering the garden. And if I watered the garden, they just got better and better. You know, she's a great mentor. She was a great mentor to me because I've learned so much from her. Okay, now, one last thing. Then I'm going to let you ask some questions. 2007, I retired from band directing. Okay? I hate the word retire. I hate that word, but that's what they call it. They call it retiring from band directing. Okay? Because I wanted to do something else. Because I had been, I'd lived in Trenton, Tennessee since 1980. Moved there in 1980. And in 2007, I'd 27 years? I lived there, and I loved Trenton. I love it. I can remember when I was in college, a sax player here, and we used to go to Humboldt on Saturday mornings and teach private lessons in Humboldt, okay? And we'd drive through Trenton to get to Humboldt. And I can remember telling him, I love this town. I think it's the most beautiful town I've ever seen. And we'd drive through the tree-lined streets. Love that. And I can remember doing that. So I moved there in 1980 because I was teaching at Gibson County High School, and I didn't want to live in any of the towns that Gibson County served because that would cause somebody else to be mad. Oh, he lives in Dyer, or he lives in Rutherford, so he don't live with us. So I moved to Trenton. It was neutral territory. But anyway, so I've lived in Trenton forever. So in 2007, it was time for somebody to run for mayor of Trenton. Mayor had been there. He was a four-year mayor. But there was nothing happening in town at all, nothing going on. And so I said to myself, I'm going to run for mayor. I'm going to run for mayor. And I did. And you know something? I got elected. Yes. But the deal is this. When you've taught three-quarters of the people that live in the city, you're going to get elected mayor. It's just going to happen. So I got elected mayor. And, you know, slap me in the face, I'm the mayor. So, what am I going to do? Well, so what you do is you go around the town and you figure out what's going on. Well, everything I'd ever been to, they said this to me. If you want things to come to your town has to look like someplace they want to come to. So I said, okay, step one, we're going to clean this town up. We're going to clean the town up. And so what we did is we went to every vacant lot, we cleaned the vacant lots up. And we went to every house that was falling down and we tore them down. We tore down in 2 years 100 houses in the city of Trenton. 100 houses and cleaned those lots off. We fixed the streets, we redid the downtown, we built a pedestrian park and put a really neat mural on the wall of the coffee shop right next to the pedestrian park. And we built a stage where we could host concerts. And that's what we do in the fall. We have a concert series that we do. In the fall, we host it. And then other times of the year, other people use it. And then we brought art into City Hall, into that sterile old City Hall building. We brought art on the walls and put art up on the walls and made things really great. It made great things really. I loved that job. Because I love being mayor, because guess what? It was just like teaching. You could deal with people on a one-to-one basis every day. They didn't, you know, it wasn't, you didn't have to write your congressman, you didn't have to go to Nashville to see anybody, you didn't have to wait till the guys came in from Washington. You could go right downtown, open the door, and you could see me in my office right back there. Here I was, that's where I was sitting. And they'd say, I want to see the mayor. And I'd say, come on, bring him on back. And some days it was great. Oh, and some days it wasn't so great. Woo! Because when people got something to say, they don't mind saying it to you. And I did that for 8 years. And it was a great job. It was a great job. But I was 60 years old at that time. And I decided, you know, I don't need to do this. I need to do something else. I want to challenge myself. And so now I'm doing what I want to do. I'm playing music. I'm traveling. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I'm having a great time. But I want to tell you this. I want you to become music educators. I do. I want you to do that. And I want you to be really good at what you do. But now it's hard. It's hard work. It's hard work. There's nothing easy about it. I love movies. One of my favorite movies is the girls' baseball movie, A League of Their Own. I love that movie. And in that movie, somebody's saying, well, but playing baseball is hard. And Tom Hanks says, it's the hard that makes it great. I love that. It's the hard that makes it great. You don't want to do things that are easy. You want to do things that are hard. You want to solve problems that are hard problems to solve. And I want you to be music educators. I want you to one day be out there and do what I got to do for 30 years. It's a great thing to do. Okay? I really appreciate y'all listening to me for the last hour. Thank you for inviting me. Emily, thank you for the very nice intro. And right now, what I want to do is, we've got a few more minutes, and if you don't want to hear me talk anymore, then you better start asking me some questions. Okay? So does anybody have any questions about anything? Surely you do. Yes?
How do you make a name for yourself when you're first starting out?
How do you make a name for yourself? Well, one thing is for you to make your program a program that other people will look at and say, ooh, that's a really great program. I wonder what she's doing to make that program like that. I wonder what she's doing, and people will remember your name. People will remember they remember two names. They remember the names of the people who have the great bands, and they remember the names of the people who have the worst bands. Okay? But it all goes back to knowing what you're doing, caring about, here's the thing. Care about your kids, learn your material, teach them to be successful, and you won't have to worry about making a name for yourself. It's going to happen to you.
But for me as a student, I want to do band camps, or I want to do something like that to get in touch with directors around the campus.
Okay.
So how do I?
What you do, it's a matter of networking, okay? It's a matter of networking. So you've got to find somebody. You could do this. I had this happen many times. Write a letter. If you can get the band director's emails, that'd be even better. But write a letter and say, my name is so-and-so, this is my major, I would love to work your band camp, this is what I do well, I would just love for you to think about me when you get ready to do your band camp. And send them a letter. Always looking for staff. People are always looking for staff for band camps. Okay. And so that might be a way to get your name out there. And once you do one band camp, if you do a good job, then that band director is going to go, I had so-and-so last summer and she did a great job. And you can hire them. And that's how it gets started. That's how I got started.
Okay?
Or who your major instrument is what?
Flute.
Okay, so Charles?
Mm-hmm.
Lewis? Okay, well, Charles knows everybody in the world, okay? So he can put your name out there, he knows every human being on the planet, I think, so have him help you get your name out there, okay? And I'll tell you something else people are looking for. People are looking for teachers to come in and teach private lessons to their students also, okay? They're looking for that. And so if you can find somebody who's looking for a private teacher to come in and teach flute, that's a good way to get going. Okay? Questions? Yes?
Okay. I minor in music, but I played West African music for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I would really love to start my own ensemble, because that's how I got introduced to music. I was in Cote Dance Ensemble in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I really just want to help people become aware of traditional music. I feel like people fade away from it a lot. I love classical music. I'm a nice fan of it. I really appreciate it, but people need to understand where music actually came from. And I feel like that's where the disconnect comes about a lot. And it's more so of brass and things like that. And it's just I kind of want it to be, just fun music. I don't want it to be always so competitive. It's just somewhere, a congregation for kids, just an outlet.
Man, you are in the greatest place in the world to do that. Okay? Let me tell you what we used to do. I don't And let me tell you something. I was here in 1972 to 1977. This place don't even look like itself anymore. And I don't even know what this was. I don't even know where I'm standing somewhere, and I don't even know where it was. But anyway, we used to go out on the patios of the student center and just set up and play. You know, there was no money in it, but we used to just go set up and play, you know? We'd go out on the porch and set up and play. You know, you're in the greatest place in the world for that, because if there's open minds anywhere in the world, it's here, okay? And so, you know, that's the way you get started. You know, do that, and then somebody might say, well, we'd love for you to come and do this for this or whatever, you know? Everything starts small. Everything starts small, and then you work and you build it. And yeah, people need to hear West African music. Do you know Dr. Hill?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I auditioned for it. That's how I actually got into the program.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if anybody can help you promote percussion music, she can do it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. We got 2-3 minutes?
Okay.
Oh, sure.
So I'm sure you've met many music educators. Is there like any common characteristics of the music educator?
You know, some of them are really good musicians. A lot of them aren't really good musicians. Some of them are great people, skilled people. I think that's a great asset to have, is people skills. That's something that I've kind of leaned on my whole life, is I've got some pretty good people skills. If I was here long enough, I could talk you into jumping off that thing up there, but I'm not going to do that. Some are great musicians, some are people skilled people, but here's one characteristic they all have. They love music and they love kids, and they care about kids. They love music and they love kids. And that's important. That's the characteristics I see. Okay, Emily, I'm sorry.
The University of Tennessee at Martin is pleased to present their certificate of appreciation to Tony Burris for significant contributions to the future success of music
education. Well, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Tony Burris this week as much as I did. We would like to thank Micah Barnes and the UTM Recording Studio for making this episode possible. Hashtag Music Ed Love would also like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in, and we hope you'll return for our next episode titled There's No Place Like Home, in which we discuss strategies to create the ideal learning environment for your students. We hope that this week you will be able to sprinkle a little stardust on all of your students, uncover the greatness within a few more humans, and send those stars through the stratosphere. Happy musicking, friends!